Hello, this is Hillel Tekton here. I'm going to discuss today, the 22nd of November 2013, the question of what stage we are at in the downturn. Now, I prefer to call it a depression. Generally, people talk about downturns and those who look at reality but are afraid of using the word depression talk of the Great Recession. It really, of course, doesn't make any difference what exact term you use, except that it's fairly obvious that people, certain people, particularly orthodox economists, governments, bourgeoisie in general, don't want to call it a depression, which of course would be a good reason to call it a depression. So let's look at how far we are into this depression. What are the chances that it be negated or brought to an end? What I'm going to do is first outline the general points I'd like to make, then discuss the statistics and more or less come to the rather obvious conclusion that there is very little of a recovery, even if there is something which is called a recovery in certain parts of the world. And then finally, I'll go back to the three points that I'm going to make now. The first point I'd like to make when looking at the current stage of capitalism, as it were, that is, say, the depression, is that we have to understand it in terms of a complex expression of the often hidden and sometimes open forms of the class struggle. Its contestants are not always conscious of their role or their reasons for their actions. At the present time, class consciousness and the consciousness of the movement of history are often buried deep in the minds of humanity. And while discussing this, one has to discuss the strategy, therefore, of the ruling class. As I just said, the question of consciousness is actually complex. Nonetheless, we are not in the same situation as the 19th century, when the actions of the class were taken largely unconsciously. Today, there's much more consciousness of the class, partly because they've been overthrown at one point in history, and partly because, as others have observed, we no longer have small business ruling, as it were, or medium-sized business. We have big business. We have large so-called monopolies. Large firms play the crucial role in our society, and consequently, it's not difficult for those who own, those who possess, those who control to coordinate strategy. In one work, it was estimated that there are only 101 very large firms which control a large part of the product of the world, of the world economy. So obviously it's not difficult for there to be some sort of coordinated strategy. But nonetheless, in fact, there isn't one. So we will discuss that after we go through the statistics. Secondly, having said there's not a coordinated policy, nonetheless, there is some kind of muddled policy, you can call it that, some kind of a policy which is being implemented. And it is useful to discuss what it is and how far it has been successful or unsuccessful, or what is likely to happen to it. And the third question I'd like to discuss is whether it is indeed possible to have a temporary solution such that the policy, which I've just said is muddled, becomes a real successful policy and possibly brings an end to the depression, at least temporarily, let's say, only to plunge into it again. And thirdly, therefore, the question obviously is, can the present downturn be brought to an end? Can we return to the period, let's say, as it was after 45? Or for that matter, in the peculiar situation after 79 down to this downturn? So those are the three questions I want to look at, and that's what I'm going to go through. If I'm not able to complete it in this podcast, I'll do it in a further podcast. So let's go to the question of statistics and ask the question of whether there is indeed a recovery as it is proclaimed in Britain. It's impossible not to read the newspapers or listen to the BBC and not be assailed by statistics which apparently show that the downturn is coming to an end, there is a recovery, etc., etc. So let's just look at what's really being said. Firstly, let's look at Europe, particularly the Eurozone. Let's look at the Third World, and then Great Britain, or the United Kingdom, and finally, the most important in terms of the world economy, the United States. Well, if we look at Europe, it's rather a sad scene, as expressed by the bodies which oversee Europe, as it were. The general agreement is that there is a recovery, but it's a very slow recovery. Of course, the term recovery here only refers to what is called a recession, defined by negative growth over two periods. But the question is much deeper than that. A depression or long-term downturn implies stagnation over long periods, that there are upturns, downturns, all within this stagnation. Well, clearly, if what one has, which is what one has had, a downturn of 0.1, 2, or 3%, or a downturn of 1%, minus 1%, and then an upturn of 0.1%, or an upturn of 1%, 1.5%, one isn't getting much change in this. Furthermore, what's true all throughout, in fact, is that unemployment remains high, and there is only minor change in the number of people who are unemployed. It goes up and goes down. But by and large, it remains very high, judging by previous periods, after the war, that is. Or for that matter, it isn't a disgrace, as it were, or negative disgrace, in relation to the Great Depression. It, of course, hasn't reached the figures that it did reach in terms of unemployment in the United States or Germany. However, it remains high. So, if we look at Europe, then it's claimed that they're no longer in recession. There is a very slow recovery. So slow, in fact, that the Eurobank had to cut its interest rate from 0.5% to 0.25%. Well, a bank which has to do that is in desperate straits, or rather, it sees the economy which it is part of in desperate straits. So it's clear that one cannot talk of recovery except in some kind of distorted sense that orthodox economics uses in terms of GDP going up by 0.1 or 0.2 or whatever percent. So, of course, commentators haven't been slow to say that there isn't much of a recovery. In the Financial Times, Wolfgang Murchau has been banging on about the non-recovery or the great difficulties that the Eurozone has faced and continues to face. And he repeated it this Monday, in fact. Today, as I said, is the 22nd of November, Monday then was the 19th of November. So today is the 22nd of November. Sorry. Now, Munchau last Monday reached the conclusion that the only possible solution was for the bank to engage in quantitative easing. In other words, buying the bonds of its various constituent countries, something which the German government has refused to accept. So doesn't seem much chance that that will happen either. So we can say that the future of Europe remains open. It's not clear that the euro will survive, the eurozone will survive, and if it does survive, it will not be a pretty sight. It will not become a pretty sight. The position, of course, in Greece is dire. Position in Spain, Italy, Portugal is only mildly better. If we talk of class struggle, which is the way I began, there's no question but that we are talking about a bitter class struggle in these countries. The fact that working class hasn't succeeded is clear, but it will not be possible to continue over very long periods of time maintaining such an extreme policy. However, we come back to this at the end. The Third World was at one point regarded as the part of the world which would bring the entire world out of the depression. The so-called BRICS were the countries of the future. That is no longer regarded as credible. The growth rates of the major countries involved, China, India, Brazil, have gone right down. Most particularly in the case of Brazil, where, of course, there was this mass demonstration. In China, where there are regular demonstrations, apparently 100,000, 150,000 a year, the growth rate has also gone down by a few percentage points, officially from 10% down to 7.5%. What the real statistics are is another question. The essential point is that the government had to say that the growth rate was declining. In the case of China, there has to be a high growth rate in order to deal with the movement of labor from the countryside, even though it is strictly controlled. So, the question of China is a long discussion, and I can't go into it now. But whatever is clear, it is that it will not take over the world, as one book has just pointed out, and that it has to find a way in which it can maintain a high growth rate. India, from this point of view, from the point of view of having to feed its population, of course, has not been able to do so for a long time. And it's not doing that much better. There may be a growing middle class, but the fact remains that the rate of growth there has also come down, that the so-called great stimulus introduced by bonfire of regulations, so-called, in the 90s, has not worked its charm. If we look at Brazil, with which we started, of course, we have a government there which claims to be left-wing and which made a number of concessions to the demonstrators. However, there is no obvious way in which it can be seen that it will be able to raise its growth rate, or in fact provide exactly what the demonstrators were calling for. The last brick, there was BRICS, South Africa, of course, has reached the point where the discontent of the population has overflowed. We've had 34 platinum miners killed in Marikana last year, and we have had strikes all over the country. The strikes are precisely for a better standard of living, or in fact a reasonable standard of living such that people can survive. The survival of people is in question in South Africa, where the age, the survival age, or the age of death may be close to 50, but in general has been in the 40s for some time. So if we look at the third world, the situation in general is desperate. So there's no joy to be obtained there, as it were. The only thing that can be said, as in everywhere else throughout the world, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, and that there is a substantial middle class in the third world, and that it has expanded and the top layer has become richer. The position in Britain has not fundamentally changed. However, what has happened is that the government, in order to be elected, in order in fact to deal with the failure of its program, which was to reach a balance by 2015 such that they would not incur any more fiscal debt. That's to say, there would be no deficit in the annual accounts. Well, they've now postponed that, or they have earlier rather, now postponed that to 2020. They've extended the period, in other words, of the cuts which they introduced when they came in, when the Conservative government came in. They've also introduced various measures which act as a stimulus, most particularly for construction. So it's not surprising that the recession should have come to an end. The growth rate at the moment is not very high, just 1.5%. Expect, and they're predicting that next year will be 2.something%. But again, this is not much change. It's simply a reflection of retreat of the government policy. Government policy known as Plan A, they've declared, remains as Plan A, but in fact it has already slumped over to an unrecognized Plan B. But the fundamental question for Britain has to be how far it will deal with its export deficit, how far it will deal with the development, the redevelopment, the return of industry, of manufacturing industry. And it hasn't gone very far there. It's gone nowhere. The government is trumpeting the fact that its production of luxury cars is doing well. That is true. That's as far as it goes. And of course, if there is any genuine downturn in the near future, Britain will be in tremendous trouble, because of course the demand for luxury cars will go down. Now, the point then is that everywhere in the world we see that there's very little change. There is a mild change, but very little. The crucial country is the United States. Now, there again, the level of unemployment hasn't changed very much, as is constantly stated on the radio, on TV, in order to reassure investors that the United States will not stop its quantitative easing, the $85 billion which the Federal Reserve Bank issues each month. The situation, in fact, is summed up by a number of commentators. A commentator in J.P. Morgan said that U.S. potential GDP growth is just half of what it used to be. Called it the Great Stagnation. In fact, this commentator says that the long-run growth potential of the U.S. economy continues to slide lower, by our estimate, to around 1.75%. If realized, this would be the lowest of the post-World War II era. The Council on Foreign Affairs made the same general point and said the economic expansion following the 2008 recession has been the weakest of the post-World War II era. The candidate to replace Bernanke at the Federal Reserve Bank, Yellen, said the objective of federal policy is to broadly benefit all Americans, especially those who are seeing harm come to them and their families from high unemployment in a recovery that's taken a long time and is frankly disappointing. Well, that is a recent statement made by her to the Senate. Really, one doesn't have to go any further in understanding where the United States is. Growth there is positive, but after all, it has an expanding population. And it has an expanding population coming into the labor market. So it does actually require, to remain static, as it were, growth of between 1 and 2%. Which is more or less where it is, which is around 2%. However, the situation would appear to be worse in that the economist writing this prediction that potential GDP growth is just half of what it used to be goes into the detail of why that is the case. In other words, why is growth not going to be very great? And the answer that he has is to say, well, partly it's a question of population, but then he also argues that innovation is much more limited, or more limited, or much more limited, and is likely to be so over time, and it's particularly true of IT. But one must, of course, ask why this is the case, and one reason, the fundamental reason, is the one I've often referred to, the way in which the profits of big business is being saved, is not being spent, is not being invested. Well, obviously, if they don't invest in research and development or in more IT or inventions in IT, then you're not going to get growth you're not going to get rising productivity very easily. So the point then is that we're talking about not just present day growth, short term growth, although it is true of it, but of longer term growth too. Of course, this does require a longer discussion. Well, I didn't manage to get to the detailed theoretical discussion. I'll do that in my next podcast, which will follow this one. Thank you.